We're speaking with Tiny Funhouse friend and mover, Mark. Mark is currently in new media, but he is a historian by birthright and also a former park ranger. Why don't you, I mean, if you're willing to, why don't you tell us a little about your background then in terms of your relationship with monuments?
I wouldn't describe my relationship with monuments as particularly close, other than I did work for the Park Service for 3.5 years and worked at the Robert E. Lee Home in Arlington Cemetery, which I guess is technically a memorial. And from that memorial, we had views of various monuments, but they were quite a ways in the distance. So that's unfortunately about as close as I got to the monuments. If you were hoping for something a little more intimate.
I know that, when you were working at Arlington House, you had stressed to me in the past, and I think this is interesting, is that memorial's relationship to the mall, even though obviously it's actually in a different, governance. We don't think of it as being part of downtown, but it does have a geographic relationship.
Oh, very much so. It has a geographic relationship that is a part of its symbolic relationship. Robert E. Lee, of course, the leading Confederate general during the Civil War, and the home where he lived before the Civil War was occupied by the Union Army pretty much from the start of the war. And Lee would never return there to live again. And then in the early 20th century, there was a movement, kind of the lost cause idea, but a movement to honor Robert E. Lee, and his home was turned into this memorial. And the way the other monuments and memorials were built on the mall, it was very purposefully done. Of course, you have the Capitol at one end of the mall, the Washington Monument in the middle, and then the Lincoln Memorial at the westward end of the mall. Well, the Lee House and the Memorial Bridge, which the bridge I believe was built in the early 1900s, they pretty much line up with the Lincoln Memorial, and this was very purposefully done to symbolize an extension or a connection between Robert E. Lee and Lincoln, who of course were on different sides during the war, but they both played a role after the war in bridging the gap, if you will, between North and South.
I brought that up because this inauguration, I think a lot of people were tying to a lot of the symbolism, Lincoln's Bible being used, and also President Obama has cited Lincoln as sort of a central figure in sort of his vision of his presidency. I was curious, you attended the inauguration ceremony as well as the concert and the weekend, so a few different weekend events, and of course you live in the Washington area. And what was your sort of an immediate memory, or sort of the, when you think of the inauguration, what moment comes to mind for you?
So I don't know if it's really one moment, but I guess just I have a picture of my mind of sitting or standing there, because Lord knows we weren't sitting, and just being surrounded by all these people, and everyone was fixated on one of the many jumbotrons from our vantage point, and just everyone seemed to be, it sounds, like a campaign slogan, because it was, but everyone seemed to be really on the same wavelength there and united, and that was pretty cool to see. Pretty cool to feel.
And I could have looked this up myself, but what is your current understanding of how many people were out there?
The most commonly I've heard 1.8 million or so. And I'm not sure if that's the estimate for those who were on the mall, just on the mall, or on the mall and on the surrounding streets, because as we know, there were quite a few people who spent their morning in line and never made it to the mall. But I, 1.8 million, it's obviously a huge crowd and probably the biggest crowd that I'll ever be a part of in my life, I would presume. So it's having grown up here and viewing myself sort of as a unofficial ambassador for the city, I guess, or that's the way I tend to act. It was pretty neat to see all those people in D.C., and clearly many, if not most of them, were from out of town. But, you know, to have such a world event right there, you know, in my backyard was pretty cool.
In terms of the actual event itself, the organization of it, or you know, maybe the organization considering, as we were just talking about, the kind of crush of folks that were down there. And also, I was struck, I mean, most of the people who were there were unfamiliar with the systems, unfamiliar with the city. And what did you think about the event at the time? And then I guess also now, a few days after the fact, we've read a lot more about what was going on and some of the controversies. But at the same time, I mean, like you said, the event was, its, you know, it, for the people who actually made it to the surface, was impactful.
Indeed. Being down there and knowing the geography, basically, I didn't feel really daunted as much as I know I would have had I not been familiar, as many of those folks were. I didn't find the signage or the direction to be recognizable in most cases, if there was any at all. I think you and I encountered that one cop who was yelling out direction to people, and I don't even know if the stuff he was yelling was correct, though in our case, you know, it did get us kind of pointed in the right direction. I think they could have done a better job just with, you know, putting up some signs on various corners and pointing people. I mean, I think they were kind of reacting on the fly to a degree, but, you know, as far back as November, people were talking about how many people would be in D.C. for this, so they knew it was going to be a crush. I just think it's a shame that some of the people who worked the hardest probably for the campaign and came the farthest end up spending that time in a tunnel, like the Third Street Tunnel, and didn't get to see what we got to see.
Now, the people that we saw, I think I have this mislabeled on my photos, but I think I've labeled it as the blue line, but I actually think it is the purple line that turned into the purple tunnel of doom, I think they're calling it, is what I have a photograph of, where you see the people stretching out from the Third Street, I guess, tunnel.
Right. I thought that was the blue line, so I don't know.
That's what I thought, too, and I've labeled it in my picture, so maybe it is a different one. But regardless, there's something they call the Purple Tunnel of Doom.
Right, so, right.
Now, at the in my kind of final question is just, which is the one my mother was constantly asking me, which is, were you cold out there?
Yes, though not as cold as I thought that I might be. I think the Boy Scouts rule of dressing in layers definitely came into play, and I think we were moving so much for the first few hours that it wasn't likely we were going to get too cold, because we were pretty much in motion the whole time. When we were standing out there, I was not particularly comfortable, but it was more a case of just having been standing for a really long time and, you know, trying to stand up straight and being on a hill and stuff. Yes, it was chilly, and I was happy to have the hat and gloves for sure. But, you know, overall, it kind of was what I expected, and we dressed for the weather, so that was good.
We left your apartment at what, about 7:20?
7:20, and we boarded the, I believe, the 10B, and then, you know, went to Braddock and went from there. We thought we were going to L'Enfant, and we did eventually go to L'Enfant, and they did not let us out of the train for good reason, I guess, because there wouldn't have been space for us.
Mark, thank you for spending this early morning hour with us at the Tiny Fun House. Yeah, we appreciate your commentary and your insight.
Well, thanks for having me. It's always fun to catch up with the residents of the Tiny Fun House.